My name is Kyle C, and today, on a very special edition of The Stoop, we got the trailblazer, the icon, the Soca queen, Miss Allison Hines, to join the show as we discuss her career. We break down the beginning stages of her career. She takes us behind the scenes of the phenomenon that became Faluma, the impact of Roll It Gal, the state of the Soca industry, and a whole lot, I mean a whole lot more. Please note that South Sharaf is available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and Google Podcasts is where you can listen to all shows from South Sharaf Radio. I think it goes without saying that anything less than the 5-star rating love will be completely uncivilized. Just uncivilized. And to listen to my entire catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthSharaf.com. Once again, that's SouthSharaf.com. It's The Stoop on South Sharaf Radio. So just a note, this podcast was previously recorded. It was recorded on a couple of days before Christmas, so the beginning of this podcast will make sense now that I said that. All right? Let's start the podcast. Roll it! Welcome to The Stoop exclusive. Today I have a very, 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 very special guest. You know what? Let me rephrase that. I have an icon with me today. she's a legend in Soca, and she's continuing to do her part to grow the culture, still making great music, making films now. And I'm sure she's heard this many, many times, but so seeing her perform on stage for the first time, she brought a fan up on stage to whine on, and I can probably say that was the first time in my life I became extremely jealous of another man at a Soca event. But that's another story for another time. That's another podcast for another time. ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the one and the only Allison Hines. How you doing today?
I am awesome. That is funny. The truth is the truth, man.
The truth is the truth.
It's true. It's very true.
And how is your holiday season treating you so far?
It's been good. I'm still busy though, which is a good thing. But I just haven't been home for a lot of December. And I'm actually gonna get back home like just before Christmas, like in the nick of time.
Okay.
I'll be back home, but I make sure that I'm home for Christmas. I don't. The only way that I would travel for Christmas is that, you know, my family would have to be with me in order for me to travel during Christmas. But that's a very hard and fast rule that I have had since I've had my daughter. You know, I was like, every Christmas I need to be home with her, and that's what it's been. And she's 15 now, and you know that's going to continue until she goes and, you know, goes away to college, and then I'm crying and, you know, all that good stuff.
Well, I mean, of course, I mean, it's the holidays. You can't miss out on black cake and conkeys and mabi. You can't miss out on that either.
That's true. But conkeys is independent. So we just had conkeys.
Oh.
Conkeys are for independence. But the black cake and the sponge cake and the, you know, for Bajans, the ham and the stuffing and, you know, all of these things. I don't eat meat. I'm pescatarian.
Okay.
So I stick to fish, but I'm good. Usually I get, you know, some nice flying fish, even though it's super expensive right now. but I still enjoy, you know, I enjoy Christmas. As we know, it's family, you know. Right. It's really about just kind of having that time with family members that maybe you didn't even really get to catch up with during the year. And that is your time. Christmas Day and Boxing Day. Christmas Day is in Barbados, is at home. Like, everybody, in the day itself is actually kind of quiet. People will go to church, they go to midnight mass, they go to 6 o'clock, and everybody's basically home with their families. And then Boxing Day is the day that you actually go visit. So Boxing Day is when now you will host people coming over, or you go to somebody's house, and that kind of stuff.
There's definitely a point. For me, that's what Christmas is all about, the holidays. Just really about spending time with friends and family and just hanging out and catching up. And, you know, that's not the biggest thing. But let's face it, like, black cake, sponge cake, it's all rum cake, right? West Indian, it's all rum cake.
It's cake.
What's some rum in it? It just depends on the kind of rum you want to put in it.
True. Could be anything from babash to, you know, whatever you want.
All right, so in the world of soca music, you've had this amazing career. You know, you've made a bunch of classic records. You've pretty much done it all so far. But you know, everybody has a starting point and a beginning to this whole process. So just to start off, like, when did the love for soca start with you?
It actually started when I moved to Barbados with my mom. My parents had split up at that time because I'm British born.
Right.
So I went to school. I went to primary school and stuff in England. And then my parents split up, so my mom took me to Barbados with her. And she and I used to go to Barbados on vacation every, you know, for summer. So I fell in love with Barbados on those vacations. Mm-hmm. And so when she did tell me that we were gonna stay, I was ecstatically happy. I was like, yes! I get to stay in Barbados. I was super excited because I used to bawl, like cry. You know, like the kind of cry where
hyperventilating. And,
yeah, the snot coming down and the whole nine yards. Like, that's how I would be every time I had to leave Barbados to go back to England. I did not want to go. And so when she finally told me that we were going to stay, I was like, okay, I hope you're not. Don't mess with my feelings. Like, this better be serious. Let this not be a joke. So, started living in Barbados. My mom was always, when my parents split up, my mom and I relationship got that much closer. And I saw her as, she's always been independent minded. She's always been that type of go-getter woman. But it's really only now as an adult that I look back and I realize how strong she really was, because she picked up from England where she had a life and a family, and she took her child and she went back to Barbados and started all over again. We moved to Barbados with the clothes that were in our suitcase. She didn't move with any furniture, like nothing. Like, we literally started from scratch all over again in Barbados. But my mom had help. So her uncle had a house. He was living in the U.S. at the time, and he had built a house in Barbados. And he allowed us to live there for as long as we wanted to. All my mom had to do was pay the utilities. She didn't have to pay rent. So I know that would have been, you know, a big help, seeing as it was only her paycheck coming in, and she had to support me. So we really, I think through that is how our relationship, you know, it just got that much closer and that much stronger. So when I did come to her fresh out of school at like 16, 17 years old, and I say to my mom, I want to join a band. Mm. And she's like, okay, I know that, because she knew that singing was always my passion.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, I know that you're going to do this to the best of your ability, so go ahead and pursue it. That was pivotal in my life, because so many of my counterparts and colleagues did not have that support early in their career. At that time, you know, most people were like, well, you don't get a real job, you know, you can't be this. Oh, the musicians and sex and drugs, and it's, you know, it's all of this. And she got all of that too from people.
Yeah.
And she just supported me. So I kind of wanted to get that out there, that it only takes one person, whether it's a mom or if it's a family member, a really close friend, you know, it only takes that one person to believe in you and you believe in yourself for you to be able to push through and pursue and go.
Yeah, because the support at that age is so pivotal, you know. It's such a
thing. Oh, absolutely.
She gave you your wings, essentially.
She did. She absolutely did. Because she could have been, you know, one of these narrow-minded kind of people that was like, oh, but that's not a real job. And you're not doing that. You're going to go to college and you're going to go and study this and you're going to go and do that. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't have done it, but my heart wouldn't have been in it. Yeah. And I know that, you know, I would have done it just to kind of please her, which I know a lot of people, you know, kind of end up doing. And then you end up dissatisfied in your life, because I feel very blessed to be able to do what is my passion. And music is my passion.
And you know, it's funny, because just to touch on what you're saying, like, most people, you see a lot of people in life, they don't live their passion, and it's you don't notice it at first, and then there's a part of you when you get old and you realize, like, whether you figure it out on your own and you start to follow your passion, or you see other people not doing theirs and you're just like, wow, you know, it's not a common thing. It may sound cliche and common, but it really isn't.
No, it isn't. A lot of people do not get to really live their passion. You know, there's so many stories out there of, you know, some doctor, some, you know, psychiatrist, some psychologist, some, you know, scientist, some kind of, who is great at what they do, but their real passion, which they've maybe managed to keep as a hobby, is being a musician, you know, in a band, or art, or photography, or, you know, they still do like dance classes on the side, but really and truly, that was their passion at the time. And for whatever reason, you know, they never got to follow it.
Yeah. Was there a moment that made you decide you're going to go take this path and be an artist? And if so, like, who were your influences?
There wasn't a moment, because music has always been a part of me.
Right.
From the time I was a kid growing up in England, the radio was my best friend. I was a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
So I would be home a lot by myself, because my dad worked, he worked shifts, so he would work days 1 week, nights one the following week. And my mom, she worked as at an office. She worked as a secretary. So she worked in the city, so her commute, you know, she wouldn't get home for a while. So I would be home, and the radio was my best friend. That was my company. That was, you know, that kept me occupied and kept my company until whichever parent got home. And so music has always been a part of me. And I knew every song. I knew every song on the radio, like every top 100, 50, 20, 10, everything. I knew everything. Wow. And I was always singing. I was always, you know, humming. I was always in the house. That's why my mom was able to give me that kind of support, because she knows her kid. Mm-hmm. She knows that, you know, I was always coming home to her and singing some song that I learned at school or something. Like, it's always been a part of me. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know how I was going to be able to, you know, how it was going to manifest. Like, how I used to imagine myself in front of thousands of people, and I'm singing, I had all the antics, I had a brush in my hand as a mic, you know, it was like the whole work.
It was important for you.
It's always been a part of my life, and it always will be. It is a part, it's not the whole of who I am, but it is an important part of who I am.
And was there a moment during that time when you started becoming an artist? Was there a moment in time where you said to yourself, like, hey, you know what? I may have something here, you know, or, you know what? I think I'm on my way. Like, was there a point in time where, like, that ever came across?
I think when I got my first actual song that played on the radio in Barbados, when I first heard, like, my song on the radio, I was just fascinated. I was like, oh my gosh, like, that's me. People are listening to that. Like, you know, there's a DJ that actually purposely played that song, you know. And it wasn't even so much that I felt like something was happening. I think by the time I even realized that anything was happening, it had, like, already started. Like, it was already on its way.
Yeah.
When I got Ragamuffin and I released it for that crop over, which would have been 96.
Yeah, that song was huge.
I didn't know I had no idea that the song would have done what it did for me as a first up-tempo song. That was my first, like my first real song. I had recorded songs before that kind of got some play, but yeah, they were all right. Mm-hmm. But Ragamuffin came out and people just held on to this song. And I was shocked. I was surprised. I was happy. I was like so many things mixed up in one. And I was excited. And then at that time, I didn't have a car or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I was catching minibuses. I was catching the van. Mm-hmm. And I would go in the van stand. And I remember maybe like 2 weeks before Kadumant Day or a week before, mm-hmm. all the guys, the conductors, the drivers, everybody, Allison, that's the song. That's the song for the road. That's the song that we want. Ding, 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 ding. And I was like, wow. Like that was mind blowing to me. I was like, but these people, like they really know and they really like this song. And then when the announcement was made that I had won the Road March that year, I was like in Kitty Kingdom of Hog Heaven. I was so happy. I was like, this is real. Like, this is real. This is the real deal right here. And then right after that was like, oh, crap. So now I have to prove that I'm not a one-hit wonder. Mm-hmm. Because the work now starts. Like, when you get that first hit, then it's like, oh, God, I have to try to reproduce this now. Like, I have to now, like, be as good or better than what I just put out. You understand? So mm-hmm. Once we were over, like, the happiness and the excitement and stuff, then, you know, we as a band, meaning Square One, we were like, okay, guys, now we got real work ahead of us. Mm-hmm. Like, no, we really have to prove ourselves. We have to prove that we're not just a flash in the pan, that we can keep producing hits.
Yeah. And there's a pressure that comes along with that, too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because there's that expectation now. There's that expectation. Everybody's like, okay, so you're coming with next year, because last year was this. And people don't realize that soca is the only genre where you have to produce new music every single year.
That's true.
Every year.
That's true.
Like an R&B or a pop artist can put out an album this year and it can run for the next 2 years because they've already decided, okay, this is going to be the first single from this album, and then this is going to be the second, and then this is going to be the third. And so that album is going to could run them easily a year or two. And while that album is running, then they could look, like, you're touring, you're doing this, but you can also look now, okay, now I could go back in the studio and produce another album.
Or make a single or something, That's true, it's a good point.
Yeah, ours is the only genre where every single year, you are expected to come with fresh music all over again. It's like last year never happened. It's like, yeah, this is great, and everybody's into it. And then the next year sets it. So what are you coming with next? So what are you coming with this year? Jeez, man. But that's how soca is set up, because we're set up and connected to the carnival. So that's why it becomes seasonal. And I think we as the artists have to work. We're still working our way out of that. We're still working on producing music all year round. Like, really, and not because there's different carnivals at different times, because you're still making it seasonal if you're doing that. Mm-hmm. It means producing music and releasing it regardless of whether there's a carnival going on or not.
What was the motivation behind Faluma? Like, if you could take us behind the curtain a little bit in terms of, like, the inspiration behind a song like that.
Faluma, well, it's originally from Suriname, so it's a song that we covered. And the one and only time that I got the opportunity to perform in Suriname, because I haven't been back since then, and we've been trying to make it happen. And I think it will happen. I think we'll get it to happen in 2020. We need to make it happen. But this was Square One's first time going to Suriname for a concert, huge concert. And one of the things that we used to like to do was find out what was the most popular local song, depending on, you know, what island we were going to. Mm-hmm. So the promoter would get, you know, would send maybe a couple of songs and say, okay, these are like the top three or the top five. You know, if you learn two or three of these, because it helps you to really connect with that audience, because you took the time out to learn songs that are specific to them. Yeah. It was like when Beyonce, when she was in Trinidad, did Palad, and everybody just completely lost their mind. Mm. Like, totally went off their heads, because we weren't expecting that. And it means that she took time out to actually find that out and to get her band to learn the music so that she could do it. You understand? So it means something.
Yeah.
So they sent this song for Luma. And it was the original, because the original is online. It's very organic. It's very percussive. Mm-hmm. And it's vocal. So there's no real electronic music in it. So we then had to recreate it in such a way that it would suit, you know, you have keyboards and bass and guitar and all that. So we had to make sure that we could, you know, interpret it correctly. So we learned the song. I had to just listen to it. I have a very good ear. I have perfect pitch. So I can, like, I hear songs really, really well. And I can pitch songs. Excuse me. I can pitch a song without actually hearing it and pitch it in the correct key. Mm-hmm. And so I just had to listen to the phonetics of what was being sung, because I didn't know anybody that spoke me. I didn't even know what language it was.
Yeah.
So I just tried to get the phonetics correct so that, you know, we could reproduce it. We went to Suriname. We were there for a week. So we did like a series of interviews, radio, TV, all of that leading up to the event. And each time I would, you know, sing a little piece of Luma. And everybody was like, oh my gosh, like they learned this? Like, what? This is crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was like super, super popular at that point in time. So for the concert, was at this huge gymnasium. It was a sold out show. So, you know, there was people to the rafters. Like, it could not hold any more people. Mm-hmm. Plus, it was live on TV in Suriname. It was also being carried live on radio. So, if you weren't physically in the place, you could listen to the concert, you could watch the concert on TV. So, like, the coverage that Square One got just from that one show, mm-hmm. the whole of Suriname saw or heard us in some form or fashion. Of course, this is before live streaming and all of it.
Yeah.
So when we did the show, we did the concert and we performed the song. What you hear at the beginning of
you hear the crowd going crazy, yeah.
That is the live recording from that night in Suriname. That's what that is. That's not effects and, you know, that's not out of a computer.
Yeah.
That is the actual live, that's actually from our live performance that night. And we decided to put that at the top because it just gave it, you know, it just finished the song. It gave it the right ambience. Instead of trying to reproduce it in the studio, we decided, let's give it that live energy.
Yeah.
And we had no intention of recording our song. None whatsoever. We just learned the song for the tour. The tour was super successful. We had a great time. We came back to Barbados. And because we were on the club circuit, because there was a vibrant club circuit then. Mm-hmm. We were on the club circuit then. And so we started to just perform the song, you know, in Barbados.
Yeah.
And people just was like, what is this music? And then our fans, our hardcore fans that used to follow us all over, started to be like, y'all need to record a song. Y'all need to record a song. Y'all need this song. So then now, we were in the process of recording whatever album that was. I can't remember right now. Mm-hmm. And we then had to make that decision. We were like, maybe we should really record this song, you know. Because we had no intention of doing so. Mm-hmm. So we got in contact with the band that whose version we covered. And we actually flew them in. We were like, you know what? We need to get this right. So we can't just do this by ourselves. Mm. So we actually contacted the band. We flew in some of their members. And they were a part of the recording. when we were actually recording for Luma. I think they're actually on the track, if I'm not mistaken. They also sang back the background vocals and stuff on the track as well, because we wanted to make sure that it was authentic.
Authentic, right.
Yeah. So when we were done and we released it, I don't know. I can't explain for Luma up to now, because from the time the song released, it completely shot off like a rocket, and people just, and nobody can understand what I'm saying. I don't know what the hell I'm saying. Nobody cares, because it is the whole energy and the vibe and the, for lack of a better, like the Africanness. Like it just brought out, it brought out that culture in everybody, that listened to it. And I, again, I was like shocked. We were all shocked out of our minds the way that Faluma just took off. And then each time that we would perform it, and how people would just go absolutely batty. They'd just lose their minds. And I was like, what is in this song that is making these people get on like this? Like, this is mad.
But you know what, Allison? And, like, honestly, you, it's funny because the moment you heard the song, you like, you know, one of those things that the moment you hear something, you're like, oh my God, that's it. Like, that's how you felt right. The moment you heard Faluma. Didn't matter if you didn't understand it. The moment you heard it, we were like, as a fan, you were just like, oh, that's it. That's the one right there. Like, that's it.
Wow. You know? And up until now, up until today, as I speak to you, Faluma is, a lot of DJs tell me, you know, that's the go-to song. If you want to get the party going, drop Faluma. And all the girls come in. So you know, once the girls hit, the fellas come in. Like, everybody is on the dance floor trying to break off the waist. And every time that I perform live, I have to do Faluma. There is no way that I could perform anywhere and not do Faluma. There are people in the audience, from the time I step on the stage, Faluma! I'm like, okay, give my chance now. I know, step off on the stage. But people, that song is one of the songs that will never die. It will never, ever die. And I feel very, very blessed to be in that position, to be able to have music like Faluma, like Togetherness, that are classics that people love, you know, they're evergreen.
And that's amazing, though, because, you know, you always see that with, like, different music artists, like, throughout history, where sometimes their biggest hit is something they just didn't see coming. They're just like, they love it, they play it every time, but it's like, but then you ask them and you're like, I don't know how this came to be. I don't know. But, I mean, you know, so it's
funny
hearing that.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
It's because, like I said, from our side, you're looking at it like, oh, man, you know this is a hit. And like I said, so to hear that side, it's like, it's not surprising, because sometimes that's how it goes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We knew it had something. We knew that. But I think the speed that it happened, and it was a late release. And I remember that year, it was a late release in comparison to, like, because we would have already had songs out and your music is already out. But Faluma came out and just blew everything out of the water. Absolutely everything.
Now, speaking of which, to go on the other side, like, what song did you make throughout your career while, you know, when you're recording in the studio, you knew right away, like, oh my God, like, Allison, I did it. Like, this is it. This one is going to be special. And the results kind of matched it.
Roll it, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Roll It Girl, without a doubt. The first time that I heard the demo, I was like, oh shit, this is bad. I couldn't believe it. I was like, can I go record this like right now? Like right now? Like, I know I just heard it, but I want to go record it. That is how I felt about Roll It Girl.
You knew
that
right
is exactly how I felt.
Right off the top, you knew it, like immediately.
Right off the bat. I was in love with this song. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Wow. That obviously, that's a great record. And like, I know the song is about women's empowerment and strength, but what motivated you to make that song? Like, was it just the timing of it just coming into your life at that moment in time, or just like you just?
The writer is a talented young lady by the name of Chantel Lynn, and she's also an artist in her own right.
Right.
But she's a wicked songwriter. But she's like a pop R&B artist.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know. Impossible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's Chantel.
Oh shoot.
Okay. Yeah, that's Chantel. So, at that time, she was an unknown. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew. She was an unknown writer. She was unknown. Nobody knew her. And when she was always a fan of mine, and she still is to this day. Mm-hmm. And we're good friends too. And we had some stuff that happened over the years that I'm not going to get into here. But yeah, we have been able to kind of, you know, reconnect and get past that, and you know. But at that time, she was an unknown. And when she wrote this song, it was only after, like years after, when she and I finally got to sit down and talk, that she told me that she wanted to write like a boss song. She was excited and nervous and everything at the same time, but she wanted to make sure and write a song that was just, you know, that was, it's like, this is the queen. I'm writing for the queen. How am I going to write this song? And she knew that I've always been about women's empowerment and that. And so she went down that lane. And she did the demo and she sent it. And as I said, I heard the song for the first time and fell in love immediately. I was like, yeah, this is it. This is it. This is a badass tune.
That's sick. That's amazing.
Yeah.
What did Square One mean to your career? I know. Just touch on what you were saying earlier, because I know you were saying like you wanted to go on a band and you ended up being with them, but like what did it mean to your career overall? Like looking back on it,
Square One is my family. Mm. Still are. We're mm. still we actually have a we still have a chat. We have a Square One chat on WhatsApp. We're still in contact. We still, you know. Excuse me, we link up every now and then. Mm-hmm. You know, we might link up for lunch or dinner or something and just kind of vibe. But Square One, that's my foundation. Mm. That's my foundation. That's where the artist Allison Hynes started and grew and developed and became the artist that people see today. Square One is pivotal and is at the core of who Allison Hynes, the artist, soca queen, Caribbean queen, all of that is from Square One. So there's no way that I could go out and claim and say, well, this is Allison Hynes, without acknowledging Square One. Mm-hmm. Because that is where I grew. That is where I cut my teeth. That is where I learned. That is where I, you know, fell down and got up and dusted myself off and went again. Like, all of that. And we were all young together and we were all, we all supported each other. We were there. And that's how we became, they're my brothers, mm-hmm. you know. And that's how we really developed. Square One was more than just a band. We became a family. It wasn't just a matter of just kind of touring and then you go and play and... We would hang out together. We would go shopping together. And that was like almost from the beginning. Mm. We would go shopping together. We would go to movies. If we're at the hotel, we're hanging in one other room. We, you know, we went to everybody, whoever's weddings. We went to births. We went to divorces. Everything. Mm. Like everything that you go through with your family, we went through with each other. And I think that is what made Square One the band that it was, because it was more than what was happening on stage. Mm-hmm. So I could never not mention Square One when I talk about my career, because as far as I am concerned, the artist that is here now would not be who she is without Square One.
So the vibe was there just from minute one.
Yeah, because some of the guys were actually old school friends too. Mm-hmm. So there was already that friendship in creating the band, when they created the band. And then I came into the band after it was formed And then the last member to join was Terry, Mexican Arthur, who became the musical director. He was the last member to join. And we never, and the other thing too is that we never changed members. Like a lot of bands, they would have had somebody left and somebody else came in and, you know, the vocalist changed. And Square One had the original members from the beginning to the end.
That's crazy. What is your feelings on the state of soca music right now and the direction that it's heading towards?
I think soca is it's still growing and it's still evolving, because music doesn't ever, no matter the genre, music doesn't ever just kind of stay in one place.
Right.
And if it does, then that means there's no development going on. There's no forward progress, there's no forward movement. R&B that was created 10, 15 years ago is not like the R&B that's being created now.
Right.
You know, rap 10, 15 years ago is not what is being created now.
Not even close.
You know, not even close. You understand? Mm-hmm. It's gone through so much changes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you don't know where it's going to go from here. Mm-hmm. And soca is the same thing. Soca is constantly changing, it's constantly evolving. And there are, you know, and there's always going to be people who are like, oh, well, the soca, it's sounding too much like pop, and it's sounding like this, and it's sounding like that. But it has to change. It has to evolve. My thing is, I don't have a problem with the fusions. You can fuse it with Afrobeat, with EDM, fuse it with whatever you want. Just make sure that at the core of it, it is still soca, but you're still feeling that energy of the soca coming through, and, you know, giving that energy and that vibe, because only we could do soca the way that we do it. And when I say we, I mean we as Caribbean people.
Right.
There's going to be little variations. The soca that comes out of St. Lucia is a little different to Antigua, a little different to Barbados, a little different to Trinidad, etc. But overall, what we do and the energy and the vibe that we bring, we are the only ones that can do what we do.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
People can take, you know, different variations from it, but then when we do it and we put our stamp on it, is a different thing. So for me, as long as the soca part of it isn't lost, use it, play with it, have fun with it. That's what music is for. It's for having fun, and it's for entertaining people and taking people away from, you know, whatever crap they're going through. Or, you know, the other day, this song that I just released, West Indian, it's getting like some amazing response. I am truly, truly happy and feel truly, truly blessed. And there was a lady, I saw a comment under one of my posts, and she was like, Alison, I had a shitty day the other day, and I got in my car and I put in West Indian, and I was vibing all the way home, and it took me out and I forgot about my bad day. That is what music is supposed to do.
Yeah, it's supposed to touch you in that way. I totally agree with you. And you know what, it's funny, because music is the one genre where, I mean, you're an artist, so just by proxy, you're supposed to grow. But, you know, but people have expectations once you hit a certain standard that they only see you in that light. And it's weird, because other parts of your facets of your life, you can grow. You can grow in business. You know, you can grow career-wise and different things you're looking to do. But in music, they expect you to be this one sound, this one set, and that's it. But if you do that one sound and what's set for the rest of your career from when you hit that standard, now it's like, you know, look, this one is, man, they don't want to do something new. So it's like you guys, you know, in a rock and a hard place sometimes when it comes to growth in music. I think that's important where what you're talking about, where, you know, you're able to kind of fuse, you know, like different sounds and stuff. Because I love it. I love the fact that you can hear yourself, you can hear, you know, different artists on like an Afro beat and kill it the same way and still have that soca element. Like, I think that's important.
Absolutely. I don't think a lot of people don't realize Roll It Gal is actually not soca.
Mm-hmm.
If you take away my vocal and you just play the music, it's pop.
Yeah.
The music underneath it is pop. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's pam, pa da da, pa da, pa da, pa da da da, pa da da. It's pop. It is not soca. It is my vocal that brings the soca element to it. Mm-hmm. It gives it that. So when I put my vocal on top of it, mm-hmm. that gives it, oh yeah, this is a Caribbean energy, there's a Caribbean vibe. But it was so, the subject matter, which is, you know, the girl power and everything, appealed across the board. Mm-hmm. But the music, the combination of that, just appealed to everybody. I know the song was huge here in Canada, oh, everywhere.
Yeah.
It's still in playlists. I know it still gets, it's still in rotation, you know, on mainstream stations here. It went everywhere. It went to Latin America. It went to England. It went everywhere. Like that song, just people just held on to it. And for them, it was just a good song. It wasn't about whether it was a soca song or if it was this or if it was that. It was like, it's a good song and we like it, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
So that's why, and one of the reasons why I am here in Toronto at this kind of time, and because I would like to add,
you can't escape that. You came in December.
Yes, I know. I saw the snow. You know, it's like, okay, great. but I'm actually working with some new songwriters I've never worked with before. Mm-hmm. And they're Canadian, but Caribbean heritage, right. West Indian heritage. And we're working on some stuff. We've actually finished one song, and it's nothing like anything I've done before.
Okay.
We're not producing soca. We're producing great music. I just want to do some other stuff.
Yeah.
And I believe that this song that we just finished could have a really big impact on just on people, not just Caribbean region, not just Black people, but just people. And that's my goal. My goal is, I'm gonna always make soca. I'm always gonna, you know, because soca is a part of me. Mm-hmm. But I'm also an entertainer, I'm a performer, I'm a singer, you know. Don't just limit me to soca. Mm-hmm. And this song is quite different, but I love it. I love how it came out. I'm really happy. The team is really happy with it. And we're gonna kind of look at how we're gonna treat that one differently. Okay. That one has to be treated differently because we're looking mainstream. We're looking mainstream for sure.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to hear that one.
Yep.
And I got a couple more questions, and I'll let you go. But I just have to ask these. But mm-hmm. As a woman in the industry, being in a male-dominated industry, what are some of the obstacles that you had to hurdle over? If you mind getting into that a little bit. In terms of respect.
To be very honest, and I can only speak about my experience, so I cannot speak on behalf of any other females in the business. Mm-hmm. Because I was in the band, because I was in Square One,
yeah,
there was a lot of crap that I did not have to deal with because I was shaded from that.
Yeah.
Because I was the only girl in the band. Mm-hmm. And so the guys looked out for me and, you know, they were very protective and they made sure. So whereas an experienced, an actual solo artist, a solo female artist coming up in the business would have a completely different experience to me. Not necessarily that it would be a bad experience. It would just be different. Right? Mm-hmm. But for me, I didn't have, like, I can't say that I had, like, major obstacles to overcome as a female. Because the fact that I was the only female in the band at a time when most of the bands, especially, like, in reference to Trinidad, most, if not all of the bands, actually, were fronted by men.
Mm-hmm.
All of the bands were fronted by men. All. If a female was in the band, and I will be bluntly honest, she was there as decoration. She was there to look pretty. Mm-hmm. She was there to, you know, sing background vocals. If she was lucky, she might get to sing a one song, mm-hmm. come forward, sing some low song, and then that's it for you. We're studying even more.
Right.
And so the girls were not. Girls in soca were not, they weren't any powerhouse females like out front. Mm-hmm. We had female Calypsonians, but not in soca. And that's what I saw. And so being with Square One, the dynamic was different. We had two male vocalists and a female vocalist. But I had hits under my, I was starting to have hits under my belt. Mm-hmm. So when we came into Trinidad for Carnival, our first like couple of years, people were like, what is this? Like this, them turned everything on its head. Mm-hmm. Because this female, this girl, is out front. She has hits under her belt. She's commanding. She's, you know, I just took everybody by storm. It was like, damn, where did girl come from? Like, who is she? Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind of effect that I had. I didn't have to fight for my spot as a girl, you know. Mm-hmm. I went out there as a performer, not just as a female performer. Mm-hmm. I went out there as a performer to just go and give of my best. My focus was always on the performance and on the song and delivery. So it wasn't about looking cute. It wasn't about, like, that wasn't my focus. My focus was, when I get on that stage, I need to make sure and entertain these people to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. That when I come off, everybody drenched with pouring sweat, and the crowd is like, yeah, yeah, we want more, we want more. That was my focus. Everything else that kind of came, you know, the whole sex symbol status and this and this, all of that kind of came along with it, mm-hmm. but that wasn't my focus. My focus was the performance and giving up my best, and that is still my focus.
What advice do you have for the younger generation of ladies coming into soca now and trying to push the genre forward like you are?
Well, I'm seeing some of the young brigade. I'm seeing Nyla, I'm seeing Nessa, Patrice, and there's, you know, a couple of others coming up. I'm hoping there are a few in Barbados, but they just haven't made that jump outside of Barbados into the region. Yeah. And I would like to see that. I would like to see Faith and Nikita and some of these other girls, you know, really kind of pushing and getting out of, they're known in Barbados, but that's, you know, they're not known outside of that. And there needs to be that impetus, and you need to be hungry for it too. Like, you really need to have that hunger in your belly, mm-hmm. to be like, I want to get out there. I want to, you know, I really want this. I can do every possible thing that I can to get myself out there, to do whatever within reason, obviously, to become that successful. Because there's one level to be known in your island, but then the other level is obviously to be known within the region and further afield. So I'm looking, I'm watching, and I'm seeing, and I'm actually seeing that the Nyla and Nessa and them have found their own path. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. You find your own path. It's not about, you know, trying to be a clone of somebody else, or you do what you do. Nobody can do what you do the way you do it. Right. You know, we're all unique. And so I'm loving that these girls have, you know, they found their space, and now they're working and they're developing and they're growing. And I have nothing but encouragement for them. And I can't wait to see what other, you know, fresh young faces are going to be coming into the genre.
So, you know, what is the inspiration behind bringing up your male fans on stage and essentially grinding them into dust?
Grinding them into dust. I love it. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know if there was, like, because when I was in Square One, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have really done it because I had two male vocalists on the stage with me.
Right.
So there was, you know, there really wasn't a reason for me to, like, bring up anybody out to the crowd.
Right.
Although we did do it, like, every now and then. Just as, I guess, kind of an additional way for the fans to get a little bit more involved. Mm-hmm. You know, and for that lucky guy to have the opportunity to, you know, be on stage and, you know, get his little 15 seconds of fame kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was just something that I realized that, you know, the crowd loved it. And, you know, I had fun. The guy had fun. So, you know, everybody's having fun. So,
oh, hey. I'm sure the guy had fun. I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did.
Apparently, yes.
I speak for all men that say yes, yes, that yes. I'm sure. I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. And I guess my final question I want to ask you is, you know, and you were touching on this before, you just released your latest single, West Indian. I personally want to step back from it and just let everybody know about this next single that you got right now.
Yeah, so West Indian is a song that was written and produced by Jelani Pop Shaw. Mm-hmm. He is one of our West Indian writers, one of our Caribbean writers who is writing, you know, just producing some really amazing stuff. He did Savannah Grass for Kes this year. Mm-hmm. He's done, I think he did Fast Wine for Marshall and a mm-hmm. couple of other big songs for him. Mm-hmm. So he's, you know, he's building a really nice reputation for himself mm-hmm. as a songwriter. This is actually the second song he's done for me. The first one he wrote was Take a Walk, which was like a couple of years ago. Yeah, he wrote that. And that was our first time actually working together. And the energy that we had was so great. And actually, when I did Take a Walk, I actually recorded West Indian the same time.
Oh, okay.
So we actually recorded West Indian like about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And we were going to release both songs, but we released Take a Walk. And then we were like, you know what? West Indian it's a different energy. It needs a different, you know, treatment. And time, because we were looking at Trinidad Carnival, et cetera, et cetera. Take a Walk was growing nicely. We were like, you know what? Let's leave it. Let our rest. Let's decide when we want to release this song. Mm-hmm. So last year is when we said, all right, you know what? We want to release this for Carnival 2020. And so we actually sat down and strategized as to how we want to deal with the song, what we want to do. Me and management sat down and, you know, tried to figure that out. And Pop is very hands-on when it comes to the songs that he writes. So he was also he's been very instrumental in just how we wanted to get it out there, how are we getting it out there, what way are we doing this in terms of, you know, how are we going to do the lead up to the actual release for the song, et cetera, et cetera. So we wanted to do it a certain way because, as the title says, and as I've been saying so far, this is a song by West Indians, for West Indians, about West Indians. Mm-hmm. And it is for West Indians wherever they are in the world, and you do know we are everywhere.
Everywhere.
We are everywhere.
Everywhere.
And this song, I would like, one of my wishes for this song is for it to become an anthem for the Caribbean, okay. for all West Indians. Because this isn't a Bajan thing, this isn't a Trini thing, this isn't a Jamaican thing. This is a West Indian thing. Mm-hmm. And that is why this song, when Pops brought this song to us, we were like, this is a wicked tune. Mm-hmm. This song here, it has that oomph. And I released the song just over a week ago. And from the time it dropped, the response to it has been amazing, 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 amazing. We have been getting constantly just, you know, yes, proud West Indian thing. I in New York. I am in London. I in Canada. And it's all of these people just connecting with this song. And that's what I wanted. That's what we wanted. That's what the team wanted. We wanted to have. And it only just started. It has only just started. And we have a couple of other things in the works, in plans to as to how we want to, you know, continue the momentum and keep it going. And as I said, Trinidad Carnival is our launch pad.
Yeah.
But this song is, I think this song is going to have a life of its own within all the different markets. Mm-hmm. I think that's what this song is. This song is, it's just, people just love it. They just love it. And DJs, you know, hitting me up. And, you know, I put up a video the other day just calling out to the DJs. If you don't have it yet, you know, send me an email. And the response was great. The response was really good. We got DJs from all over the world just hitting up for this song. So I'm really, really happy. Very, very happy with this song. We're also doing a video. The lyric video is out with it right now. Okay. But we're actually doing a full video for it. So we've already started shooting. Because we want the video to reflect as much of the West Indies as we can.
Yeah.
So we're working on that right now.
Okay, that's good. So basically you're saying that you're not filming this video in Toronto. That's basically what you're saying, right?
Hell no.
So Allison, so really quickly, I know you got a lot of stuff going on coming down the pipeline for 2020. I want you to do me a favor and do everybody that's listening a favor and just let everybody know what you're doing, from the film to the video to the merch, just everything. Like, just let us know what you're doing.
So I'm my foray into acting. I'm in a movie. The name of the movie is Joseph. And it was created with Ghana. And this year was the year of return in Ghana, where Ghana has been encouraging the diaspora, the African diaspora, and people of African descent to come back to Ghana. And so this movie is kind of along those lines, where the main character is a Caribbean character, and he wants to basically reconnect with his ancestry in Ghana. And so we actually shot the movie in Barbados, Jamaica, and Ghana.
Okay.
And it was a great experience to act for film. And the premiere actually of the movie was in Ghana. It was about a week or two ago.
Okay.
And the reviews so far for the movie have been really, really good. It is going to be release in cinemas in Ghana and Nigeria in January 2020.
Okay.
I don't remember the dates, but you can come up, just hit up my IG page, and I will have that information there as it comes. Mm-hmm. The premiere in Barbados is going to be January 14th for the Barbados Film Festival. So it's going to be premiered at the Barbados Film Festival January 14th or 15th,
okay.
2020. And then there are going to be other releases as it goes. So all of that info, as it comes, we will, you know, we'll get it out there in terms of releases for London and New York. And because people keep asking, you know, Canada,
right.
You know, where are they going to be able to see the movie? Where are they going to be able to, you know? And again, just based on the trailer is also up on my IG page. People are really interested. They want to see the movie because it has a little bit of everything in it, you know, some intrigue and secrets and all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm excited. I'm excited about it and to be a part of it. So in addition to that, with the release of the song West Indian, we've also been looking at some merch, people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in process right now. I actually think the designs are almost done for the West Indian t-shirts. We're working on that. I think we basically got the design fine-tuned. So we're looking at having t-shirts for guys, of course, baby tees, vests, hoodies. And we're also going to be looking at having kid sizes, because you know, we must have little West Indian kids in their West Indian t-shirts.
All right, I got my kids. And I got them.
There you go. There you go. I got one, you know. So mm-hmm. Some of us have, you know, kids, nieces, nephews, all of that. And maybe I think we might also be looking at some onesies so the babies can be involved too. So that West Indian merch, so that would be my line. I have a ambassadorship with a company called Caribbean Apparel.
Okay.
They produce some really good, like, high quality stuff, and they, you know, a lot of Caribbean stuff. They have jackets and hats and all kinds of different things. So I'm working in partnership with Caribbean Apparel to create this merch that's going to come out for West Indian, so you can look out for that. Also, I have still in the pipeline a wig line that I'm working on. We are fine-tuning and working on that. It's been in the works for like a couple of years now, so we're just trying to, you know, you have to kind of get everything right. You can't just jump out and just, especially when it comes to hair. Wigs and quality, and you know, girls know this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So we can't come out till we absolutely ready.
Right.
So we're working on that, but that's also in the works, the wig line. So I think that's it for now. But there's, you know, yeah.
Listen, on that note, Allison, thank you so much for coming on the Stoop today and having this conversation and sharing your point of view on your career. Like, this is really, this is a bucket list moment, man. I really appreciate this. Thank you so much. Like, this is awesome.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I am, you know, very humbled to have been able to do this. And I'm very thankful to all the fans, wherever you are in the world, for giving me the love and the support that you've given me for so many years. For those who have been following me for many years, thank you. For those who are new fans, who have just, you know, stepped in and discovered soca, and welcome to the world of soca. Welcome to the West Indies, because we welcome everybody. And so I'm truly thankful for the career that I have had up until this point. And believe me, there's still more to go. A lot more to go.
No, and just keep pushing it forward. That's all I'd say as a fan. Just keep pushing it forward like you continue to do. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
First of all, I want to thank all of you for tuning in to a very special edition of the Stoop Exclusive. And I also want to send a special shout out to Allison Hines for coming on the podcast and discussing her story and sharing moments of her career with us. I honestly hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed doing that with Allison. So that was awesome. To keep up with everything that she's doing, go on her IG and Twitter at Allison Hines for both IG and Twitter. And check out her latest single, West Indian, that's on all platforms right now. Allison, thank you once again. I salute you, queen. Now, once again, as always, South Sharav is available wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you rate, review, and subscribe, and continue to listen to all the shows from this vehicle. And make sure you go to SouthSharav.com to check out my entire catalog of podcast shows. Once again, that's SouthSharav.com. Now, to keep up with tradition of this podcast series with every interview that we've done with soca artists, we're going to add a mini mix to end the episode off. Hey, it's only right. Doing the mix today will be Wuk Up Productions. I'd like to thank him very much for doing this and everything else. He knows what it is. You can follow him on IG at Wuk Up Productions. That's WUKUP Productions. And you can listen to his show, Wuk Hours. That's WUK Hours. You can listen to that show every Thursday from 2 to 5 p.m. on My Line Radio. Once again, that's every Thursday from 2 to 5 p.m. on My Line Radio. For Allison Hines, this is Cal C. And you've just tuned in to the Stoop Exclusive on South Sharav Radio. Thanks for tuning in once again. Wuk Up Productions, take us out of here with that Allison mix. Until next time, folks, peace. Let's go. Get ready to move. Get ready.
Productions.
Jump and let them see, yes. Love and unity, yes. One big family together.
6 all time. Walk up production, let's do this thing, this thing.
We taking all Christmas.